thanks for tuning in tonight. And especially this vast new audience of right-wing curiosity seekers that have joined in. We know who you are. It's okay. You know, I mean, you're allowed to be here. I may insult the hell out of you and call you bad names, but that's only because it's all true. You're allowed to be here, though. This hour is sponsored by Francis Fecteau. Message, keep on doing what you're doing, Mike. Thanks for helping me keep my rage up. Your fans are legion, even in Utah. Utah. Speaking of Utah, Texas has become the second state after Utah to pass a measure that would specifically allow guns on college campuses. Now goes to the Texas House, where it has broad support. You know, Texas doesn't have legislators. They have clowns. They have murder clowns in their legislature, the representatives and the senators. The author of the bill in the Senate, some freak named Jeff Wentworth of San Antonio, said that his bill would make college campuses safer. Yeah, of course. Of course. And how do you make the roads safer? Make sure that the open carry laws in Texas are done away with, if any exist, and everybody get drunk and drive 110 miles an hour. That will make the road safer, because everybody be going too fast and be too drunk to have an accident. Yeah. Oh, God. Representative or Senator Wentworth said, quote, "My goal this whole time is to put doubt in the mind of the shooter that, well, maybe I shouldn't go on that campus and try to take a bunch of kids out." What a dumb bastard. Where do these people come from? I guess they really do think that somebody with rationality left sits out just off a college campus, say at a bus stop, you know, those little covered bus stops. And he sits there, this guy, and he's got a backpack. And in the backpack are 300 rounds of ammunition. And he's got a couple of Glocks and a semi-automatic assault rifle. And he's sitting there, he's thinking, now, should I not go on that campus and kill the 100 people I plan on killing today? And then, you know, killing myself because demons are eating me and I have to kill 150 people to carry me on to hell. Oh, no, wait. Senator Wentworth passed a bill. There might be some kid on that campus with a .22 caliber handgun. Maybe I shouldn't go commit mass murder. Ah, no, I think I will anyway. Is that what this stupid Republican senator thinks? That somebody who is so insane that they're going to go on a college campus and open fire, that they will have what to Jeff Wentworth is a rational thought beforehand?
Maybe I shouldn't go on that campus and try to take a bunch of kids out.
Take a bunch of kids out. Take people out. You may take them out to dinner. You know, that's another thing I was going to mention the other night. You know what I'm sick of? These little speech patterns, these militarized and law enforcementized speech patterns that are showing up all over, especially with these candy-ass talking heads on local television. The expressions like, police decided they had to take him out. Or, today, this afternoon, there was a takedown on Apex Highway. Cops surrounded, blah, blah, blah. Takedown, take out. I heard a woman the other day talking about, what was the word she was using? It was somebody on MSNBC, helos. The helos swarmed in to the Bin Laden, mansion. That's a mansion? Helos. Really? Is that what you call it? Helos? Take out. Take down. Yeah, we had to take him down. We had to take him out. What are some of the other ones? It's just so irritating. You know, how this militarized law enforcement lingo has, worked its way into especially television news. which is an oxymoron to begin with. Take them out. Got to take them down. Ah, ooh, ah. Well, I just thought I would mention this bill in Texas. Second only to Utah now. Second state. Amen. Now, Wentworth couldn't get it passed on its own, so he tacked the measure onto a budget-related education bill. So now, if you want to vote against this, you have to vote against education funding in the great state of Texas. Jesus God. All right. Wentworth, huh? Jeff Wentworth of San Antonio. Isn't that where the Alamo is? Is it San Antonio? Did you hear this? A hacking group broke into a Fox website and stole the passwords of hundreds of Fox employees, as well as a Twitter account of a Fox television affiliate. The group is called, is it Lutz? Lulz, or Lula's Security, L-U-L-Z, Lula's Security. It then posted the Fox.com passwords online, altered the LinkedIn accounts of several employees. LinkedIn couldn't take a joke, deleted the accounts. Lulu's Security, or Lulz Security, also linked to the altered accounts on Twitter. In a statement, Lulz Security wrote, quote, "We invite the Internet to ravage the following list of emails and passwords from a database with Fox.com. Do Facebook, MySpace, PayPal, whatever you can get your hands on. Take from them everything. Remember to proxy up or tunnel like a pro." I know who's behind this. I know who Lulz Security is. That's Breitbart. That's Andrew Breitbart. That's his company. That's his hacking organization. Probably not. The hackers, the real hackers who did this must have been trying to get some truth into their into the Fox operation, because they certainly don't have anything there to steal. But isn't that interesting? Fox.com, sliced and diced. Listen, I'm not going to be impressed until somebody hacks into the broadcast terrorist Rupert Murdoch's personal accounts and leaves him nasty messages. That's almost impressive, but not quite. Wait a minute. Oh, you broke the law, Lulz Security. You shouldn't do that. That's a bad thing. Okay. There, I fulfilled my FCC requirement. Oh, my goodness. Omar bin Laden is pissed off. He says the U.S. violated international law. Insert your own sarcastic punchline there if you like. But, the adult sons of bin Laden have lashed out at President Obama over their father's death, accusing the U.S. of violating its basic legal principles by killing an unarmed man, shooting his family members, and disposing of his body in the sea. All right, we'll talk some more about this and other nonsense coming back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. How much longer you gonna keep the world hungry and bored? You measure your peace with guns. Your progress is in megatons. A soldier of an angry call, soldiers on foreign soil. Well, we're not here to fight your war, 'cause we know what you're fighting for. Oh, this.
nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. The statement from the adult sons of Osama bin Laden said the family was asking why bin Laden was, quote, not arrested and tried in a court of law so that truth is revealed to the people of the world, end quote. Citing the trials of Saddam Hussein and Slobodan Milosevic, the statement questioned, quote, the propriety of such assassination, where not only international law has been blatantly violated, but the principle of presumption of innocence and the right to a fair trial were ignored. The statement said, we maintain that arbitrary killing is not a solution to political problems, adding that justice must be seen to be done. End quote. The statement was prepared at the direction of Omar bin Laden, the son who had publicly denounced his father's terrorism, and it was provided to the New York Times by an American author who helped Omar bin Laden write a memoir a couple of years ago titled Growing Up Bin Laden. Let me see what else it says here. None of Osama bin Laden's sons, other than Omar, was named in the statement, so it was unclear exactly who else had approved the message. The statement said, quote, we want to remind the world that Omar bin Laden, the fourth-born son of our father, always disagreed with our father regarding any violence and always sent messages to our father that he must change his ways and that no civilian should be attacked under any circumstances. Continuing, despite the difficulty of publicly disagreeing with our father, he never hesitated to condemn any violent attacks made by anyone. He never hesitated to condemn any violent attacks made by anyone and expressed sorrow for the victims of any and all attacks, end quote. The statement added, quote, as he condemned our father, we now condemn the President of the United States for ordering the execution of unarmed men and women, end quote. Bin Laden told one of the people, or the American author who helped write Growing Up Bin Laden, Omar bin Laden told that woman that the death of his father, quote, has affected this family in much the same way as many other families in the past and the loss of a family member. The statement also said that the swift burial at sea was a violation of Islamic customs and has stirred rage. Oh, it says here, we hold the American president legally responsible to clarify the fate of our father, Osama bin Laden, for it is unacceptable, humanely and religiously, to dispose of a person with such importance and status among his people by throwing his body into the sea in that way, which demeans and humiliates his family and his supporters, and which challenges religious provisions and feelings of hundreds of millions of Muslims, end quote. The letter also said the U.S. administration had offered no proof to back up its account of the mission. It alleged the goal of the raid had been to kill and not arrest, and so on and so on. The statements by the sons of bin Laden, of course, will be laughed at or denigrated. Even my I don't know who else has read the statement on the air. Maybe somebody else has. I don't know. But even my reading it on the air will probably stir up the rabid, flesh-eating, teabag right-wing freakoids who are now going to demand that we invade Tajikistan, I guess, as a reaction to Omar bin Laden's letter. You know how that goes. These teabaggers are so filled with putrefaction, it's a wonder they can type emails, which most of them can't, but, you know, they certainly make the effort. But, the letter from the bin Laden sons, in and of itself, given the context of everything, is interesting. Do you, truth seeker, do you have doubts or questions about bin Laden's role as the mastermind? I thought Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was the mastermind and the plotter and the planner. Let's remember where we got the name Osama bin Laden as the person who engineered and carried out, well, at least directed the attack on this country on September 11, 2001. That came from George W. Bush and the Bush crime family, an organization that, as far as I know, never told the truth about anything.
Before
the hour, maybe the hacker group that took a bite out of Rupert Murdoch's ass with invading Fox.com, maybe they're part of the anonymous organization. Could be that what is it? LULZ. LULZ Security. Maybe that's the plural of the root LOL or laugh out loud. Kind of a code, maybe? Got a hint from somebody that might be the case. LULZ Security will get some laughs and respect among the anonymous crowd when it appears in the news. Well, la-dee-da. You gotta love it. This hour, sponsored by Francis Fecto. A message. Keep on doing what you're doing, Mike. Thanks for helping me keep my rage up. Your fans are legion, even in Utah. Thank you for sponsoring the hour, Francis. We appreciate it very much. Did you, have you, oh my God. Have you heard about at the Aberdeen Proving Ground in Maryland? Was it last week? I just heard about this. The Army gave a live fire demonstration of its new ammunition. It's M855A1, for those of you who understand the Army's psychotic jargon, M855A1 ammunition, which the Army says is an environmentally friendly projectile because it is a copper-tipped round instead of being lead. Of course, the shell itself, the round itself is probably depleted uranium, but the new copper-tipped round gives the military the opportunity to tell members of Congress that they are, quote, doing something to heal the planet while waging war. Is that true? Son of a bitch. Is that true? Now, that was in the Mooney newspaper, the Washington Times. So, you know, like George Bush and Dick Cheney saying that Osama bin Laden was the mastermind of 9/11, you know, until somebody else came along. You know, you got to take this stuff with a trainload of salt, as the expression goes. But a new copper-tipped round that gives the military the opportunity to brag to members of Congress that they're doing something to heal the planet while waging war. My God. I'll bet that's probably true. Bin Laden. So, before I leave the title of that subject for tonight, you know, when you stop and think about it, you have a certain boogeyman for almost 10 years. And all of a sudden, you're told that the boogeyman has been executed or, you know, shot to death and buried at sea. You have a void, obviously. A void is produced into which can suck all kinds of weirdness, right? You know this is going to happen. You know it's going to happen. Not just weirdness about the execution and disposal of the corpse, but weirdness because now, you know, the U.S.'s version of Emmanuel Goldstein will not be able to testify. We'll never know. Just like Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't able to testify, and, you know how it goes. But this will definitely, I realize the simplistic, really, truly, and I don't care who does it, and it's not even intended as an insult, what I'm about to say, but the simplistic mind just responds by, oh, they got him, they killed him, yes, yes, and that very easily segues into, USA, USA, we're number one, USA. And, you know, if you challenge that just momentarily, just challenge any aspect of that, or if you, like I did, suggest that maybe if they're going after mass killers, the SEAL team ought to pay a visit to George Bush, Henry Kissinger, Dick Cheney. And then you watch the reaction to any part of any of those statements. Any challenge, any question, are you sure you got the right guy? Are you sure bin Laden's responsible? Are you aware that we created bin Laden? Not in the sense of, you know, out of dust, the way God created Adam. But we created him, armed him, taught him military tactics and yada, 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 so that he could play havoc with the Soviet army. We created him, we destroyed him. I mean, that's almost like being God. Woo. But now that there is nobody to put on trial, so what do we do now? I'll tell you what we do. We either accept the official story, start to finish. I'm going all the way back to the Bush murder family. Go back to them. All the way up to the tactics of Osama bin Laden, Barack Obama. That's easy to do. Barack Obama, who continues to order drone attacks that, oh gosh darn, there it happened again, continues to kill innocent people, civilians, children, whomever, in various parts of Central Asia, and whose military, it's Barack Obama's military, he's commander-in-chief, whose military continues to take casualties and deaths. Why? Nobody has an answer. What's the objective? There is none. There will never be an Americanization or a Westernization or a democratization of Afghanistan. It will not happen. There will always be a Taliban. There will always be a tribal justice that to us looks brutal and cold and religious fanaticism. And yes, it is, and it does, and it ever shall be. Yada yada, blah blah, on and on and on. So, you know, it's just madness. It truly is pure madness. It's just insanity. But what we must do now, our only alternative, in lieu of a rush of theories about what happened, start to finish, going all the way back. There are very well-read and, in my opinion, very intelligent people, credentialed, not credentialed, engineers, physicists, yada, 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 who challenged the whole concept of what happened on 9/11. But you have to start from that point, work all the way down through the hideous decade of the first decade of the 21st century. Or is that the second decade? I don't give a damn. You work all the way through that until you get to Osama bin Laden's assassination. The entire narrative is one that will be dictated by the government, whoever the government is. I don't know who the government is, do you? It's not Obama. It's not Democrats. Actually, it's not Republicans. They're just the swine who do the government dance. But the narrative will be what the government says it will be, and that will be to the advantage of capitalist America or capitalists everywhere. That'll be the only advantage will be to them. Short of that, if you don't accept that, then you leave yourself wide open for all the theories that are going to start floating to the surface, unlike bin Laden's weighted body that one assumes is at the bottom of the sea. Well, not his whole body. It's been devoured at this point. But so what are you going to do? What you're going to do is what I'll do and everybody will do. If you opt for the official narrative, then you will file away and either believe it or don't believe it, like the official narrative on the assassination of John Kennedy. You will either believe it or not believe it. The official narrative on the assassination of Martin Luther King, you'll either believe it or not believe it. But it's in your head. It's going to be there. And then dancing around that will be all the tangential theories that start to pop up. I wonder if this is going to be like Elvis, where people will start to see bin Laden, just like they have seen Mohammed Atta or some of the other alleged hijackers who supposedly burned to death in fiery airline crashes into buildings in the ground. And yet these hijackers, all of whom are dead, continue to pop up. Well, they haven't recently, but they, you know, they pop up every once in a while. So I wonder, will bin Laden pop up? And if he does, will he still be trailing his dialysis tubes or what? I mean, the whole thing is just Trey bizarre.
Listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
This hour has been sponsored by Francis Fecto. Keep on doing what you're doing, Mike, is the message. Thanks for helping me keep my rage up. Your fans are legion, even in Utah. Well, thank you for the sponsorship, Francis. And what? We don't have sponsorship for the second 2 hours of the program tonight? We don't? People, people, people! Let me just ask this, and I'm not going to pursue this beyond this hour. Next hour, we're going to move on. At least this aspect of the topic. Why was Osama bin Laden never mentioned on the FBI's most wanted list as being a suspect in the 9/11 terror attacks? That's the part I don't understand. He was wanted for 11 years, I guess. The FBI, I'm looking at the FBI website now. Osama bin Laden under his picture says deceased. Gives his description. And then it says, caution, Osama bin Laden is wanted in connection with the August 7th, 1998 bombings of the United States embassies in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and Nairobi, Kenya. These attacks killed over 200 people. In addition, bin Laden is a suspect in other terrorist attacks throughout the world. Then it talks about the $25 million reward for information leading directly to the apprehension or conviction of Osama bin Laden. And, of course, the caveat should be considered armed and dangerous, and so on and so on. But that's the part. And at the very top of the page, it says murder of U.S. He's wanted for murder of U.S. nationals outside the United States, conspiracy to murder U.S. nationals outside the United States, and an attack on a federal facility resulting in death, which, according to the bottom part of this, is the embassy, U.S. embassy in Dar es Salaam in Nairobi. So I'm sure there's a simple explanation as to why the FBI never specifically said, we want this guy because he is a suspect in the attacks on the World Trade Center in New York and the Pentagon in Washington. Does anybody have any answers about that? I don't. I don't have any answer at all. Maybe Prairie 2 does. Maybe Michael and Roswell does. Maybe you do. Why? Over a decade, was Osama bin Laden never declared by the FBI to be a suspect or wanted for questioning or whatever, however they put it, in the attack of September 11, 2001? I honestly don't, I have no idea. But it seems rather odd, doesn't it? Or does it? Maybe it doesn't. Maybe that's just standard operating procedure. When you have a crime of that magnitude or an event of that magnitude, no, it's a crime. Malloy, come on. You have a crime of that magnitude, maybe you don't specifically charge someone. I don't know. But it does intrigue. Intrigues me. We will have a visit here via his usual missive when we come back from Prairie 2. Also, what life would be like if Sarah Palin were president instead of Barack Obama. A very brief little bit of that. And Florida State University took money from the Koch brothers to create an economics program with professorships paid for and chosen in part by this America-hating billionaire, so-called libertarian. Really? Is that how academia works? Florida State University? Can you imagine what that economics class is all about? Do you think it'll be the sort of economics as laid out in a couple of famous novels by the hypocritical Russian immigre Ayn Rand, the woman who wound up on Medicare and Social Security while saying that anyone who used Medicare and Social Security were leeches, and so on and so forth, and whose primary model for her male heroes was a child killer. That Ayn Rand and that Koch family and Florida State? Really? Well, that's kind of a disappointment, isn't it? No, not really. It's only a disappointment to the handful of people, relatively speaking, left in this country who really do believe that education, even higher education, is an enterprise to open up the mind. A few people still believe that. Not many, relatively speaking. Rather than an enterprise to close the mind and focus and force it into one particular economic theory, among others, other theories too, will be eliminated and tossed on the junk heap of history when more than just economics are dictated by the Koch brothers, huh? These people are real cockroaches, aren't they? Stick around, we'll be right back.
Another question.
Second hour here, given what's going on in the nation's heartland, right? We'll talk about that in a second, but a matter of fact, I think Prairie 2 mentions that here in his missive. Let's go around. This is a Malloy program. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Prairie 2 writes, can't afford steak? Try passenger pigeon. Ooh. He writes, oil continues to rise again, even as gasoline falls, although traders are attempting to float the rumor, so far unfounded, that fuel pipelines could be disrupted by the record flooding. This could be the worst flooding since 1926, and that was a bad one. It brought Herbert Hoover to national prominence as head of the Red Cross relief effort. The federal government took no part in helping the flood victims, and this set the tone for the Hoover presidency, even as he spent unprecedented sums to bail out the big banks and the Republican rich after the economy crashed. China and Russia have quietly ended exports of fuel to combat inflation from the commodity price run-up. Fuel now joins grain on the list of things becoming difficult to get, not because of a big shortfall, but from speculators tying up supply. That supply and demand thing is great if you control the supply. Not so good if you can't afford food. The U.S. is facing a likely grain shortfall near the point of early harvest sometime this summer. The first stage of the grain harvest begins in the Texas desert. Oh, wait. Texas isn't supposed to be a desert. That explains the lack of a harvest of any kind. At the other end of the harvest season in North Dakota, but much of the farmland there is still underwater from the snowmelt. All that melted snow is heading south to add to an already flooding Mississippi, which is expected to swallow 3 million acres of cropland in the three lower states alone. Some of this land will not be farmed for years, if ever. Even on land not flooded, planting has been seriously delayed by cold, wet weather, with high potential losses depending on how erratic this summer's weather turns out to be. The good news is that most grain goes to feed livestock. Even that used to make ethanol mostly ends up as leftover mash, which is made into processed cattle feed. It's also used to make all the things that go into processed human food, even vitamins, food supplements. Also, flavor enhancers like the notorious MSG, no, that's not a wrapper, think food allergies. These are now concealed by calling them modified proteins and such. Any of that stuff on the label with the long names comes from processed corn or soybeans. You will eventually see higher prices for meat, even though prices for cattle are going down right now. Demand for meat is falling because high gasoline prices are sucking consumers' wallets dry. At least that's the excuse for paying the remaining farmers less. Most livestock, you see, is owned by big corporations that don't sell through the free market. These are called vertical monopolies and are technically illegal. President Obama has made noises about enforcing the Packers and Stockyards Act. And no, that's not about football. For the first time in decades, but he hasn't been heard from lately. Family farmers that were instrumental in the progressive movement 100 years ago are largely extinct. Gone the way of labor unions and the passenger pigeon. PrairieNumeral2.com. I don't think I've ever read anything of his that just doesn't scare the living hell out of me, you know? I mean, isn't that right, Kathy? I mean, everything I get from Prairie 2, I wish he would write a piece one day and just says something to the effect. Well, good news today. The sun is shining. The bluebirds are tweeting. The stock market is immaterial because everybody's happy. Okay, I know. Bernie Sanders, writing in The Guardian of the UK today, had the following. I want you to listen to this, okay? The United States is the only major nation in the industrialized world that does not guarantee health care as a right to its people. Meanwhile, we spend about twice as much per capita on health care, and in a wide number of instances, our outcomes are not as good as others that spend far less. It is time that we bring about a fundamental transformation of the American health care system. It is time for us to end private, for-profit participation in delivering basic coverage. It is time for the United States to provide a Medicare for All, single-payer health coverage program. Under our dysfunctional system, 45,000 Americans a year die because they delay seeking care they cannot afford. We spent 17% of our GDP on health care in 2009, which is projected to go up to 20% by 2020, yet we still rank 26th among major developed nations on life expectancy and 31st on infant mortality. We must demand a better model of health coverage that emphasizes preventive and primary care for every single person without regard to their ability to pay. It is certainly a step forward that the new health reform law is projected to cover 32 million additional Americans out of the more than 50 million uninsured today, yet projections suggest that roughly 23 million will still be without health insurance in 2019. Well, healthcare costs will continue to skyrocket. 23 million Americans still without health insurance after health reform is implemented? This is unacceptable. And that is why this week, Representative Jim McDermott and I are announcing the reintroduction of the American Health Security Act, recognizing health care as a human right, and providing every U.S. citizen and permanent resident with health care coverage and services through a state-administered single-payer program. Let's face it, until we put patients over profits, our system will not work for ordinary Americans. It is incomprehensible that drug companies still get away with charging Americans twice as much or more than citizens of Canada or Europe for the exact same drugs manufactured by the exact same companies. It is an outrage that insurers still often hike premiums 20%, 40%, 60% a year on individual policyholders. And some insurers will still spend 40 cents of every premium dollar on administration and profits while lavishing multi-million dollar payouts to their CEOs. It boggles the mind that approximately 30% of every healthcare dollar spent in the United States goes to administrative costs rather than to delivering care. We must do better. Taiwan, for example, spends only a little over 6% of GDP on health care while achieving better health outcomes on some key indicators than we do. I'm very proud that my home state of Vermont is now taking big steps to lead the nation in health care by moving forward on a plan to establish a single-payer health care system that puts the interests of patients over chasing profits. The American Health Security Act would make sure every state does the same. We must ensure, to as great a degree as possible, that the money we put into health coverage goes to the delivery of health care, not to paper-pushing, astronomical profits, and lining CEOs' pockets. Amen, Senator Bernie Sanders. Now, why that piece appeared in The Guardian of the UK, I'm sure it was probably also published in this country, right? I just missed it, I guess. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Sent me, this is kind of interesting. Somebody put this up on a blog someplace. Quote, I shudder to think what life would be like if Palin had ascended to the presidency. We would still be in Iraq. We would still be in Afghanistan. We probably would have started a new war on Libya. Oil companies would be starting to drill offshore again. We would be using drones and SEAL teams to assassinate suspects. We would embrace nuclear power even after the meltdowns. Alternative energy would essentially be scrapped. Corporate power would trump people power. The government would shamelessly exploit 9/11. And we would be trying to gut Social Security and Medicare so that we could spend 60% of our budget on the War Department. And gas would probably be $4 a gallon. We can thank our lucky stars that we have hope and change instead. Oh, that is so creepy and sad. It's funny, isn't it? I just don't understand why Bin Laden was never listed as a suspect by the FBI in the 9/11 bombings. That's just bugging me. Florida State University President Eric Barron said today that the school did not compromise its academic integrity. Of course not. When officials there agreed to create an economics program with professorships paid for and chosen in part by the billionaire libertarian Koch Foundation. President Barron said two economic professors who were hired 3 years ago and are still in the faculty were chosen without any interference from the Koch Charitable Foundation, which has one of three seats on an advisory board that reviews job candidates. No, not at all. Barron explained that that only one of the two new hires came through the process agreed to with Koch, and the second came from another pool that the foundation had nothing to do with. In a 12-page memorandum of understanding signed by Florida State Senior Vice President John and three other university officials, the school agreed to recruit and maintain faculty and individuals who support objectives set forth by an advisory panel appointed by the Charles W. Koch Charitable Foundation. Well, the agreement with the foundation permits an advisory committee appointed by the multi-billionaire to decide which candidates can be considered for two teaching positions and allows it to withdraw the $1.5 million funding if it becomes unhappy with the faculty's hiring decision or if the hires fail to meet predetermined objectives established by Koch. Not the university. Not baccalaureate committees, but by Koch. Really? Well. The Koch brothers. They are now funding professorships. Well, that's great. That's really good. Common Dreams had this a couple of days ago, and it's going on and on and on about the announcement by Barack Obama about the execution of Osama bin Laden. And into the piece by Randall Amster, there's this: make no mistake, the announcement signals a clear intention to vindicate the decisions of the past decade and continue on a course similar going forward. As if to affirm this historical eventuality, the media's immediate focus on the spontaneous demonstrations of patriotic fervor that have sprung up with echoes of USA! USA! Brings us right back to those fateful September days in 2001. The tenor of these public celebratory gatherings and the content of the president's announcement convey a strong sentiment that the last decade's wars have been worth it. And likewise, that the extraordinary security measures here at home have been equally successful. On some level, the death of a single individual is essentially being heralded as a justification for the deaths of at least hundreds of thousands in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. It remedies all legal and moral defects attendant to the use of enhanced interrogations and extraordinary renditions. It clears the ledgers on the trillions of dollars spent to undertake these efforts for nearly 10 years. And it squelches dissent on Patriot Act policies and the Homeland Security apparatus. And most appreciably, it retroactively validates the Bush administration's open-ended waging of global warfare. Before the hour, we are now opening up our phone lines. If you'd like to call in, 877-996-2556. And calling from Turkey is Blue. Hello, Blue.
Hey, good day, Mike.
How are you?
Well, I've had better weeks. We were supposed to be home by now, but I called you from Romania, from Bucharest the other night.
Oh,
and
that's
highly offended.
I was highly offended. That's when I couldn't get to your call.
Well, and I thought you cared, Mike. I'm deeply offended.
Well, not that much.
But I did appreciate the flowers and the candy that you sent later.
Yeah, that's okay. That's all right. It's a Mother's Day gift, and a lot of my listeners consider you to be a real mother.
Now, Mike. All right, mate. Okay, I'm going to remember this one.
All right, listen, I have to ask you something.
No, we were supposed to be home, but
listen,
go ahead.
What really happened inside the Bin Laden compound?
Well, look, here's the thing. Remember Jim Jones?
Oh, yeah.
In Guyana,
right.
And everybody was amazed that he managed to make most of 800 or 900 people swallow the Kool-Aid, right?
He did.
Well, most Americans do it every couple of years on a regular basis. Think of the Operation Northwood,
right,
which was successfully carried out on September 11th, 2001.
Well, it was about 50 years beyond when it was supposed to have been carried out.
The Gulf of Tonkin resolution, the Gulf of Tonkin,
right.
I didn't think of that one.
Right.
Lee Harvey Oswald scene,
right,
on the ground floor of the book depository when he was supposed to be upstairs on the fifth floor.
Right.
Sirhan, who doesn't remember a thing about that day, and the psychiatrist who examined the guy said, you know, he's telling the truth.
Uh-huh.
You know, and on and on and on. Look, this whole thing is as phony as it can possibly be. The guy's been dead for 7 years. Everybody in the world, all the reputable intelligence agencies in the world know that, you know, Osama's been dead. Moreover, he had nothing to do with Iraq or Afghanistan, or 9/11, and even Dick Cheney said so.
Uh-huh.
So the other thing about it is that in military organizations around the world, and I've got some contacts, you know, in that community as well, nobody believes that these bastards, these SEALs, could have gotten within 50 miles of a compound inhabited by a designated enemy of the United States. It couldn't happen. They'd be outed the moment they crossed the border into Pakistan.
Yeah.
Nobody has any real respect for these guys. They're the sort of guys that Hitler would have hired to intimidate old Jewish shopkeepers and gypsies and homosexuals. They're not real soldiers. And they have no respect in the world. No, I'm serious about this.
Well,
They've got no respect. They would never get within 50 miles of a compound. So what Obama did to enhance his chances of re-election, has he managed to resurrect this guy from the dead and then shoot him? But, oh, my God, we had to throw his body in the ocean, and we don't have any photographs, or rather we do, but we can't show them to you because they might upset you too much. I mean, it's total rubbish.
It certainly sounds like it, doesn't it?
Well, Mike, look, I'm serious now. You can't possibly believe a single word of this. I know you don't. You may not want to say it on the air, but you don't believe a single word of this.
Yeah?
Well, go ahead. I'm waiting.
What do you think I do believe?
Look, here's what happened.
Okay.
You've got two political parties that are essentially mafiosi families. You've got the Gotti family and the I don't know, the...
Banano family.
Banano family, right? And they're both fighting it out, and neither one of them cares about the pile of corpses of Americans that they've murdered through lack of health care and the rest of it,
right.
And Iraqis that they've murdered through, you know, invasions and so on.
Right.
So it was convenient to keep Osama alive for 7 years because he was the boogeyman, and now it's convenient to resurrect him and kill him.
Well,
so
here...
Obama can look tough for all the liberals out there who are still frightened and cowering under their beds.
Okay, but no, but wait, let me tell you the question that I might have about your theory here. First of all, I disagree with you. The Democrats and Republicans are not fighting for control. Control has already been established, and the control is by the multi-billionaire capitalists who run this country now. So the Democrat-Republican thing is a sideshow. The only reason I give it any attention at all is because it is a sideshow. All right. That's A. Here's B. The capitalist slash corporate structure in this country is a little bit, still a little bit nervous about Barack Obama. You know, the community organizing bit and the dignity of man bit and all the stuff that he said during the campaign is less than an ironclad guarantee that he's going to be a real crappy person like George W. Bush or Dick Cheney. That's me. See, since they don't trust him, then why would the real power behind the American throne allow Barack Obama to become some sort of a hero by allowing him to resurrect the dead man and kill him again?
Because they're the same blokes. They're the same blokes who put George Bush in power. The same ones who put him in power, the ones who put Obama in power. That's what I'm talking about.
But
that's precisely what's going on.
So they want to keep him in power.
Question.
Then. So they want to keep him in power. Is that your
look,
bottom line?
Look, he was put in power because he was capable of deluding the liberals into voting for him because he's black, number one. And number two, if he does something they don't like, they'll never criticize the bastard because, you know, they'll be accused of being a racist. And they don't want to do that. They're too politically correct. That's one of your problems there. You people are so politically correct. You won't criticize this bastard.
No, wait. You're not talking about me, of course.
I'm talking about Obama.
You're talking about Americans of a certain stripe that won't criticize
him. No, I'm not talking about you. I don't think you believe a word of this stuff. And by the way, I want to send a word to Sanchez, your friend Sanchez there in Los Angeles.
Now, be careful. He's a licensed killer.
Well, so am I, for that matter. Hold on a moment now.
Okay.
Sanchez criticized me a few months ago.
He did.
But I want to say, he rather did. But he called you the other night while I was holding. That's the only reason I heard it.
Yeah.
The other morning where I was in Bucharest. But, and he said precisely what I'm saying at the moment, although he didn't quite know why he was right. He was right. He wasn't articulate enough or well-informed enough to tell you why he was right, but he told you, he said, look, this whole thing is rubbish, it's nonsense,
yeah.
And nobody outside the United States believes a single word of it, and that's what's so frustrating about it, Mike.
Well, let me ask you then, since this country has been identified by the writer Greg Palast as an armed madhouse, and the rest of the world does look at us like crazy people.
Believe it.
Well, then what difference does it make? I mean, why do you get so...
Because everything that happens in your country, when you send hundreds of thousands of people around the world to murder people who never did anything to you,
right.
And you corrupt the whole political environment around the world, that affects us sooner or later, one way or the other, directly or indirectly. That's why I've told you that time after time.
But the only way it affects, say, the Australians is if they have an equally corrupt government who gets in bed with the United States.
Which we had, by the way, with John Howard for a number of years, and we finally got out from under that. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Well,
you're making my point for me, Mike.
Well, but we don't invade in any manner that I'm aware of other countries unless they happen to be third world
countries. socially, culturally, financially, and economically, you do. What about economic and cultural imperialism? You've heard of that, I'm sure.
Well, of course, but are you saying that other English-speaking countries, let's stick with those, and soon it'll be only a Chinese-speaking country, but other English-speaking countries aren't infested with the same kind of parasitic capitalists as the United States?
Well, we all know what happened under Tony Blair, right? And Robin Cook, by the way, who resigned from the Blair administration, wrote a book about this very subject, about the creation of Al-Qaeda and the association of Osama bin Laden with things he never did. And in fact, he resigned from the Blair administration over precisely the same thing.
But my question was, is it not true that in other English-speaking and soon-to-be Chinese-speaking countries, you are not infested with the same kind of capitalist bastards who care not a whit about human life or about...
But it originates from the shores of the United States, Mike. That's where the power is located.
Well, but...
And that's why so many of the rest of us are so resentful of what's going on.
Well,
and why you people don't do a bloody thing about it.
Well, since we don't, then I think you should, or Australia.
So you want a bunch of Aussies.
No, Australia is still part of ANZAC, I believe. And what you need to do is just organize an expeditionary force and come over here the same way we did. Come over here and get, in this case, it would be Obama. I don't know why you didn't do it when Bush was president. Just come over and remove this person from office and establish sanity.
Now, you know you're going to get a load of emails, Mike, saying, are you suggesting that arrogant Aussie should lead an invasion of the United States? You're going to lose 90% of your readership, of your listenership.
No, actually.
All 25 of them.
No, actually, every time something like this comes up, Blue, I gain listeners because the right wing in this country goes absolutely frothingly insane every time I do something like this. Blue, I've got to leave it there. I'll talk to you again, pal. Thanks.
Stay ignorant, be remedial, wear the dust caps, loud children, cool like the hunchback, don't discuss things, shout the last word, put your good sense out the pasture, drop your IQ, that's what I do, my advice to girls and guys who want to be a Nobel Prize finalist, rocket scientists, try applying this, keep the customers coming around, if you're smart then you better start dumbing it down.
Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Next hour, I'm going to introduce you to Calista Bisek. And you're just going to love her. So stick around for that. From one of our listeners in Australia, Arkanon. He writes, don't forget we here in Australia... Or no, it starts out subject. Hey, Blue, don't forget, we here in Australia are just as thirsty for the Kool-Aid, too. We are no different. Corporations run this place now, too, and we allow them to destroy it. We have allowed two prime ministers to be kicked out by the Queen, and we are just as willing to join a war for USA and UK. We are as much asleep as America and the UK. You should put Australia in the same basket, Blue. We kill and destroy, too. Oh, well, and what's this? Oh, this is not for broadcast. Okay. All right, that's enough. Jeremy is in Burlington, Vermont. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
I want to take Blue to task for a second.
Sure.
I think Osama has been alive, and I don't think it's so much that, I don't think George Bush wanted him to dead, because he could use him as a boogeyman. I think, probably there's a chance he knew where he was, and I think Pakistan had an agreement with the Cheney and Bush regime to, hold him as a, like, kind of a under house arrest. They protected and held him off, and I think Obama finally found out about this and they took him out. I think they touted him as a boogeyman for reasons to go to war. Secondly, I don't think all our Navy SEALs should be made to look like Nazis. I mean, they have a job to do, and they do it. Unfortunately, it is killing sometimes.
Well, I've got... I've got all kinds of mixed responses regarding elite military murder teams. And I realize sometimes that some of these teams are not there to kill. But I think that's their primary objective. But that's only because it's nothing personal. It's because I have the same kind of feelings about any assassination team put out there by any government or even the freelancers. To me, it smacks of sneakiness. It smacks of extrajudicial murder. It smacks of a breakdown of law and order. Now, the people who believe in the security state will immediately point to my what they call naivete and say, you know, you only sleep tonight because we're out there on the wall. Now, wait a minute. That was from the movie A Few Good Men. But, you know, and my answer to that is you may be right, but I don't have to respect people because they are trained killers. As a matter of fact, my theory, and here it comes. Are you ready? 3, 2, 1. My theory is that if nobody would submit anywhere on earth to being a trained killer, we'd probably have a much happier nest that we could all, you know, live in. So I do not glamorize or glorify SWAT teams or SEAL teams or any type of, a group of men whose function is to commit killing. I just can't do it. I'm you know, and it has nothing to do with disloyalty to my nation or my flag or my, you know, the Constitution. It has to do with the fact that that's just not where I'm at. Now, by the same token, you know, I mean, let's face it, if somebody were to break into my house and hurt or kill a family member, I would coat my face with burnt cork, and I would put on, you know, green and black fatigues, and I would take my weapons, and I would hunt them down and cut their goddamn throat and laugh while they bled to death. So it's not that I am against killing. It's just that, it's the idea of professional hit men, and I assume they're all men, who do this sort of thing. I just can't glamorize that. I can't even, you know, accept it. To me, it's just, I don't know, it's something that is beyond me. And you know, that's okay. I would hate to think that someone is committing these acts in a false screen of saying, well, we're protecting you, Mike. No, you're not. You're not protecting me at all. You're protecting capitalist America, and if that's what you do, then you know, have at it. So I hope that doesn't sound a little bit too crazy.
I 100% agree with, I completely agree that they're protecting capitalist America more than they're protecting you and me or any other citizen in general. That being said, I do want to mention that SEAL Team 6 is the same team that saved the captain from Cambridge that was from Vermont last year from the Somali pirates.
Well, okay. I'm not saying that, you know, killing people is not sometimes very rewarding, both for the individuals involved and for the greater drama that's being played out. Sure, pirates, yeah, kill them. But again, at what point do we say, instead of killing pirates on the high seas, why not? Oh, this just sounds a little bit too left-wing, namby-pamby liberal. I don't even think I can say it. But, you know, why not work on the situation that produces people who think that piracy is a profitable idea? I mean, you know, seeking balance rather than seeking imbalance. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense anymore. It used to make sense. It used to make sense to me that, you know, life was precious and that people should treat each other with dignity and justice and fairness and honor and respect. That used to make sense to me when I was younger, when before I became aware of how the world really works. So defending Somalia pirates from Somalia, or defending hit squads from Medvedev in Russia, or defending police in China who rip the hearts out of people seeking democracy, or defending hit squads that go out and kill somebody who, as far as I know, was not charged with the crime for which he was executed. I just can't get my brain around it. Hey, thanks, Jeremy. I gotta go. We'll be back right after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. I have a dog, excuse me, that we got for, essentially we got it for Molly about a year and a half ago. And it is a mutt. He's a mixture of Cavalier King Charles and Yorkie. Real cute little dog. Very personable, very, I won't say he's real smart, but he's very personable. And just a delight to have around the house. We had a cat and the cat died, so we decided to, the cat was very old, like 15 years old. So we decided to get Rusty. We named him Rusty, the dog. So, the thing about Rusty, he, you know, dogs are pack animals, and they love being in a group, hence the name. And Rusty, like most dogs, figures out in his little dog brain who's the leader of the pack here in the Malloy family. Well, by, I don't know, by whatever standards the dog uses, and he may or may not be right about this, he's decided I am the leader of the pack. So, consequently, he spends an awful lot of time hanging around me and obeying my commands. Come here, Rusty. Rusty, stay here. Rusty, get off the bed. He'll obey my commands a lot more quickly than he'll obey Molly's, for example, or even Kathy's. So, the other thing Rusty does, he will gaze at me. He will take a position just outside the bathroom door in the morning when I'm shaving, and he will just stare. This adulation, this whatever it is, he just stares. When we're having dinner, he plops himself down and stares at me. Now, obviously, he's waiting for a scrap, but you know, he stares, adulation. And I look at that, and of course, it immediately reminds me of Republican wives, the wives of Republican politicians. They do the same thing, with one exception that I'll get to in a second. So, this morning, I opened the New York Times, and there's a picture of Rusty. No, not Rusty, although she is blonde, but there is Callista Gingrich. Used to be Callista Bisick back when she was having a lengthy affair with a married man. The married man being the serial adulterer. And come this Wednesday, maybe, possibly, will he, won't he, Republican presidential candidate. Da-da! So there's Callista Bisick. Callista Gingrich, her picture on the front page. Was it the front page of the New York Times? And she's gazing at Newt. And the photograph has Newt kind of fuzzed out. Which, when you stop to think about it, is kind of just how Newt always is lately. He's just fuzzed out. He's just a weird, weird, weird person. But there she is. Yeah, it's on the front page. There it is. Just below the fold. Her blonde sprayed-on hair is just above the fold, and the rest of her is just below the fold. And there she is, looking just like Rusty. She looks at Newt the same way my dog looks at me, with this kind of a little bit of devotion, a little bit of fear, a little bit of, I wish I was the leader of the pack. You know, whatever a dog thinks about. So there's Callista. And according to the article in the Times, her friends back in rural Wisconsin were stunned when, you know, how long ago was it? Back in 96, 97, she told her friends that she was boinking a married man. Now, I doubt if Callista used the word boinking. I'm sure she, you know, that's more of a Newt word or a Bill Clinton word. But, you know, Callista was having an affair. L'affaire de coucher or l'affaire de coucher or whatever. She was having an affair with a married man. And a blowhard, kind of an ugly bastard at that. Newt Gingrich. But powerful. Woohoo! Speaker of the House. Who was it that said that women gravitate toward men with power? Nah, can't be. Anyway, she was still in her 20s when they met. And, of course, Newt was well into his 40s, just like his nemesis, Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton, who could be president of the United States. And poor old Newt Gingrich, who could only be Speaker of the House, and only that until he was busted and had to flee in shame and go remake himself as a devout Catholic. Woohoo! So, anyway, Callista was a church-going Roman Catholic. Now, I don't know what that means, because church-going Roman Catholics are intimately familiar with the Ten Commandments. And one of those commandments says, pretty specifically, thou shalt not commit adultery. Adultery is boinking a married man. In this case, the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, who at the time was wetting his pants and exciting his base as he went after the president, who also was, in a manner of speaking, not really, but sorta, possibly, boinking someone other than his wife. You know, I've said before that the hypocrites in the Republican Party are exceeded only by the liars and the cowards. When you mush them together, hypocrisy, lies, cowardice, duplicity, dishonor, and bad hair. Well, okay, Rick Perry doesn't have bad hair. Well, okay, neither does Mitt Romney. But when you mix all that together, you come up with a typical Republican candidate for president. And I give you Newt Gingrich, or Newt gives you. This guy looks more like a vampire, a healthy vampire. Well, Dick Cheney is a vampire, but Cheney is fading away. Cheney has been exposed to too much sunlight. He is, it won't be too much longer now where, you know, he'll just go blink. But Newt obviously feeds quite well. Newt cannot look a person in the eye. Have you ever noticed that? He will look at a camera, but he cannot look a person in the eye. He stares off to the left. He stares off to the right. He looks down. He looks over there. He looks up there. He cannot look you in the eye, because he knows if he looks you directly in the eye, you will see the vampire lurking behind his eyes. Now, Callista, as so many younger women are wont to do, was very attractive to this vampire, attracted to this vampire. So, casting aside, apparently, I don't know, I've never met her, I have no idea, but it says here she was a devout Catholic. Ta-da! A devout Roman Catholic. Not just Catholic. Roman Catholic. Who apparently had no problem telling her God to go boink himself. If she wanted to boink a married man and commit adultery, hey, I'll just do it. What do they call that? A cafeteria Catholic, I believe is what, you know, you pick and choose what you want. Usually they're talking about social issues. You know, the Catholic Church demonizes gay folk. Well, a lot of Catholics say, that's not right. I have a lot of gay friends. My sister's gay. A lot of Catholics say, ah, come on, it's not really blood and flesh that I'm eating when I do communion. Come on, for God's sake, stop it. You know, these are cafeteria Catholics. A lot of Catholic women practice birth control. Some Catholic women, believe this or not, have even terminated a pregnancy. Cafeteria Catholic. Well, apparently, Callista Bysick is a cafeteria Catholic. Only the part of her faith that she decided to ignore is one of the Ten Commandments. Really?
Mother, should I run for president? Should I trust the government?
Mother,
right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Through a hole in the air, from those nags in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real.
21 past the hour. So, Calista Bisek, who is Newt Gingrich's, is the third, fourth wife? I'm not sure. And I wonder how long it'll be before she's shown the door, just like the rest of them. Advice, Calista, oh my God, don't get some sort of a potentially terminal disease, because then Newt will come into your hospital room and inform you that, you know, he's moving on. But anyway, so Calista Bisek, her friends back home just couldn't get their brains wrapped around the idea that Calista, when she confessed to them, was having an affair, a sexual affair, in that pit of snakes and vipers, Washington, D.C., and she was having that sexual affair with a married man in violation of her Roman Catholicism. Ooh, how do you do that? Well, as mentioned previously, when you're a cafeteria Catholic, you can do that. You know, you pick and choose. Although I would think that, you know, you're not picking and choosing from various offerings of the Catholic Church when you commit adultery. You are picking and choosing from direct orders from your God. Bit of a difference. Oh, well, it's all in the interpretation. Now, Calista and Newt have been married for 11 years. It's just that six-year affair that is going to come up and bite Newt on his private parts. And I can't wait. Now, Newt has been traveling around, as you know. He's been going around the country, mea culpa-ing in front of all these half-baked, psychopathic religious leaders, most of them Protestant. Although I think, you know, a few Catholics have gotten the Newt treatment. And, of course, didn't they make a movie about his meeting with the Pope? Not a movie, but, you know, a film about Newt's meeting with Pope John Paul II. Now, I don't know if it was about them meeting him. Maybe it was just a movie about him. But anything to suck up to the Catholic conservative vote, because, you know, Catholic fundamentalists are a little bit less scorchingly vicious here in America than Protestant fundamentalists. And the Catholic fundamentalists might be a little bit more willing to accept the idea that a thrice married Newt Gingrich, disgraced in the U.S. House, an adulterer, serial adulterer himself, a liar, a man without honor, in other words, a typical Republican, is running for president. You know, the Catholics might forgive him a little bit more quickly than the Protestants. The Catholics have more people to pray to, you know, more gods and saints and spooks and haints and people that offer absolution, whereas the Protestants are kind of stuck with one. Okay, maybe two, but you get my drift. Now, if you look at the picture in the New York Times and see Calista Bisek staring transfixed at her kind of blurry husband, to me, it, like I said, it looks like the way my year and a half old dog stares at me. Just that same kind of glazed over, oh God, lead me, feed me. Can I have a new bowl of water? Do we get to go for a walk at some point? Please, okay, I'll just sit here. No, I'm not. Okay, I'll be very quiet. Can I just gaze at you? You're the leader. I swear to God, it's that look. But this is a Republican politician wife look to begin with. Think. Pat Nixon. Oh, my God. Poor Pat. Poor Pat Nixon. I'll tell you what, if there is any Republican politician's wife that I feel great and enormous pity for, it was Pat Nixon. Poor creature. Betty Ford. Now, I understand Betty Ford had some serious problems going on. When she would stare at Gerald, it was usually because she was in an alcoholic, just completely phased out. Look where? Look over there. Okay. So I'm not going to say anything about Betty Ford. Bless her heart. The sine qua non of dedicated Republican wives, of course, would be Nancy Reagan. The looks, until she started interpreting for him, the looks that she would give her husband were just, I don't know, beyond adulation, beyond heroic. They were more like, I don't know. And, of course, it's my understanding from reading the biographies that Nancy Reagan also was, you know, doing the adultery thing before she married him. Huh? No? And wasn't her father, what was her father? Her father, Davis, what, was he a preacher? Was he a businessman? I forget. It's immaterial to the story. What's her name? Who is the second Bush wife? George W. Yeah, Laura. I'm sorry. I had a brain fart. Laura Bush. Who Kathy did an awful lot of good impressions of Laura Bush. Laura Bush was the same way. Laura Bush, it was fairly obvious, was on some kind of medication. But Laura Bush would stare at George in, you know, that look. There is one major exception. And we'll talk about that one when we come back.
Seekers, gather around the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, Calista Bisek had her picture on the front page of New York Times this morning, a.k.a. Calista Gingrich, because Newt is, can you stand the anticipation? Newt is going to make an announcement day after tomorrow about his plan to rescue America from ourselves. You see, the whole theme of the Newt Gingrich run for the presidency will be American exceptionalism. And according to the New York Times, Calista is on board with this. Her obvious devotion to her serial adultering husband transcends her own dedication to her Roman Catholic faith. Obviously, had that not been the case, she wouldn't have done what she did. I mean, it's very simple. Now, we're also talking about Calista in following the mold of dedicated Republican wives who were at concerns political candidates and or presidents. And as a few examples, of course, there's Pat Nixon, there's Betty Ford, there is the epitome of Republican politician wife dedication almost to the point of hypnotic insanity. And that, of course, would have been Nancy Reagan's devotion to Ronnie, up to and including the point where she would hear for him, translate for him, and you know, I guess cut up his hamburgers for him, which is good. I mean, this is what dedicated spouses do. So, there's one exception to this, of course. And, you're way ahead of me. I know you are. But that, of course, would be George Herbert Walker Bush's mother, wife, excuse me, Barbara, the one with retractable fangs. You remember Barbara, the one whose eyes would light up with a red, the whites of her eyes would turn red. Whenever she would, for example, talk to little refugee children at the Houston Astrodome. This is just like camp, isn't it? Huh? You could be back in New Orleans drowning, right? Did you lose your little dog? Aleister Crowley's daughter. You know. Barbara Bush was not the devoted sitbag. Barbara Bush let all of her men, her sons, her husband, and anyone in a two-county area who is of the male gender know that she carried a huge pair of pinking shears and was not hesitant in using them to cut things off when necessary. Now, they were obviously metaphorical pinking shears, but pinking shears nonetheless. So all of her sons, who were instructed, apparently, as was Ma Barker's sons, to go out and become successful, in a manner of speaking, all of her sons and her husband, I think it's pretty apparent if you look at the videos, look at the photographs, listen, you know, lived in absolute, utter, frothing terror of this woman. I don't think I ever saw Barbara Bush sit there and stare affectionately at her husband like the devoted little puppy that Calista Bisek is. No, no, not Barbara Bush. No, no, no. She would stare at her husband waiting for a slip-up, and you could see her reaching into her enormous purse for the pinking shears. Well, okay, I could. Now you have the Democratic wives. Someone tell me that Hillary Clinton would sit there and stare devotedly at her husband. I don't think so. Tell me Michelle Obama stares devotingly at her husband. Tell me Bess Truman stared devotingly. Oh, I know where you're going. What about Jackie Kennedy? I don't think Jackie Kennedy stared devotedly at her husband. Lady Bird Johnson, I don't think she did either. Lady Bird knew she was married to a world-class war criminal and had to deal with that. I think Lady Bird Johnson probably was into self-medication on some level. I mean, when you're married to somebody who decides to murder 2 or 3 million people, I mean, that puts you in the class, that puts you above George W. Bush. That puts you right up now. I realize when LBJ was president, George Bush was running around Alabama trying to make himself invisible so he wouldn't have to go get shot at. But when you compare Republican wives and Democratic wives, and I'm talking about presidents' wives, I think you'll find that there are a couple of patterns there. So the picture in this morning's New York Times, I swear to God, when I first saw it, my first thought was, oh, my God, it looks like my dog, Rusty. You know, the look on Calista Bisek's face. But then I started thinking, just immediately on the heels of that thought, oh, my God, there's a picture of Newt all fuzzed out with his pet wife. His pet wife. There she is. Well, in the Times article, it talks about all sorts of things. At Villanova University on a recent Thursday night, Mrs. Gingrich, that would be Calista Bisek, warmed up the audience for a showing of the couple's movie about Pope John Paul II by signing books and DVDs in her left-handed curlicue. That's what the Times says. Her left-handed curlicue. Ooh. Uh-oh. Editorializing. I'm sure the right wing will pounce on that word. Curlicue. First of all, they'll have to look it up. But when asked whether she was ready for the scrutiny a campaign would bring, she smiled tightly. Isn't that so, Republican wife? She smiled tightly and grew very silent. Are you ready for the scrutiny, Mrs. Gingrich, that this campaign is going to bring? After all, you married a serial adulterer with whom you committed adultery in, you know, violation of your Roman Catholic faith. Do you have anything to say about that? Really, is that it? Tight-lipped and silent. Newt answered for her. He said, according to the Times, whether or not she's ready for the scrutiny a campaign would bring, he said, seems to be. We've talked about it for a year. It's difficult. Really, Newt? Is it difficult? Well, you're going to save America just like you saved West Georgia College, and you saved your district back here in Georgia all those years ago. And, you know, so I'm sure that Calista will rise to the occasion, so to speak. Now, the Times went on to say that Gingrich is well aware that social conservatives, those are the crazy people who dwell among us, social conservatives are skeptical of him because he did not emphasize their issues in Congress. And what are social conservatives' issues? Eliminate all gay people. Eliminate any sort of privacy or rights attendant to women's political reality. Invade anything that farts, if it farts upwind from the United States. You know, just your typical stuff. Keep the gays out of the military. Make sure that it's okay to carry a gun into a kindergarten class. And the teachers can if they want to also. Those are the social conservative issues. Oh, that's right. And also, pay attention to that part of the Bible where Jesus says that capital gains are good and that, you know, unionizing or organizing your workers out in the olive groves is bad. So, oh, also, there's that little issue of all the divorces and the infidelities. But, you know, these are Republican voters. They'll get over that. As long as Newt says, well, I don't think homosexuals are normal. You know, the social conservatives will forgive him all of his abnormal heterosexual, or is it abnormal, activity. Who's to say whose sexual activity is normal and whose is abnormal? Well, I'll tell you who's to say it. Religious nutballs. I don't care what religion they are. Religious nutballs will be the first ones to tell you whose sexual activity is proper and whose isn't. They don't call it the missionary position for nothing, truth seekers. So here we go. Newt Gingrich, day after tomorrow. Da-da! My God, I can hardly breathe. I have been waiting and waiting and waiting to hear Der Führer, my leader announce with his gorgeous helmet-headed blonde wife who stares at him with utter devotion, not unlike Rusty stares at me, is going to make the announcement that yes, I, Newt Gingrich, will run for president with my gorgeous, blonde, helmet-headed wife as we march into the future, carrying aloft the sword of justice and the Bible and tax cuts for the wealthy. We're coming, America! We're coming! I'm coming to save you! And my wife! We're coming!
Ain't gonna take none of your life! Put me down! I put a spell on you! Cause you're mine!
What can we conclude from all this nonsense? This front page article in the New York Times this morning with a picture of Newt's pet wife gazing at him so devotedly, and then the body of the story talking about all the plans that they have and the things that they're doing. Not plans. Calista's writing a children's book that's due out in September, and it's all about American exceptionalism. We need more of that, don't we? We need to have another generation poisoned by the belief that we can invade countries and murder millions of people at a whim. How can we do that? Because we can. We're Americans. We can go to Central America. We can go to Southeast Asia. We can go to the Middle East. We can go to Central Asia. Hey, listen, when we want to invade, we invade because we're exceptional. So apparently that's the theme of the book, according to the New York Times, is about American exceptionalism. I don't think there's anything exceptional about their relationship. It was just your typical, you know, let's get together and have sex kind of thing. The fact that somebody's married is incidental. The fact that they or that she was a devout Roman Catholic is incidental. None of that crap doesn't matter. That's why watching Newt parade his hunky or his bulky ass around to the various psychopaths who are on religious television to offer up his assurances that yes, he will make sure the gays all disappear. Yes, he will deny women a right to privacy. Yes, he will invade anything that farts upwind from us. Yes, that's why he goes around to these television shows. And he sits there with the interrogator on Pat Robertson's Christo-fascist organization and answers the questions the way he thinks that the nutballs watching want him to answer. Newt Gingrich is a liar. He is a deceiver. He is fake. He is phony. He is a Republican, in other words. The Times points out that both Gingriches declined to be interviewed for the article that wound up on the front page of the Times this morning. Well, I would think so. I would think so. In 2009, after years of attending Catholic Mass, to hear Callista sing in her church choir, Newt converted to Catholicism. Now, that sentence is just bursting with all sorts of implications. Newt's devout Catholicism, his conversion was because he enjoyed hearing some girl in the choir sing? Man, that must have been a voice of the angels, amen. Good God. Oh, by the way, Newt is also writing a children's book. Oh, my God. I can't believe this stuff. I can't believe it. Callista, of course, went to work for Representative Steve Gunderson, who was a congressman, a Republican in Washington, right after college. And she got a job with the House Agriculture Committee. That's where Newt discovered her and decided to start boinking her when she was an intern. What? Wait a minute. Newt Gingrich having a sexual something or other with an intern while he is screaming his guts out about the President of the United States having a sexual something or other with an intern. Well, of course. What do you expect? Of course. Of course. She stayed with the House Agriculture Committee until the Democrats took over in 2007. And today, Callista runs something called Gingrich Productions. She makes documentaries in conjunction with Citizens United. Yes, that's Citizens United. The group that got the Supreme Court to declare paper filings to be equal to human beings. Yeah, that's what Callista does. Citizens United does the technical production, according to the Times. And Callista, former choir singer, former music major, she is especially, you'll pardon the expression, hands-on with the musical scores. Ta-da! Does that mean she writes music for these propaganda films put out by the neo-Nazi Citizens United? No, of course not. It means she just selects the music. Huh? I wonder if she does any Rick Ocasek music. You think? Maybe Roger Waters? What kind of music would she... I just wonder. Leonard Cohen? No. During the time, she and Newt worked from adjoining offices in a building on the worst street in America, the sewer, the street that houses the people who want to destroy the country, K Street. They work out of this building on K Street, which, according to the Times, is home to the sprawling enterprise that Newt's aides call Newt Inc., which produces books and films at a dizzying pace. Ta-da! Their efforts are planned around what one of Callista's aides, who's going to be her chief of staff, what she calls their thematic, the message of what they stand for. American exceptionalism! You're damn right! We are the USA! You fart upwind from us, we'll invade you. We're going to get rid of the gays. We're going to get rid of the Muslims. We're going to get rid of the liberals and the progressives. We are bringing America and the unions. Let's not forget the unions. And the social workers. God bless Ayn Rand. God bless the Catholic Church. God bless Newt Gingrich and his pet wife, Callista. Amen. Amen. See you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.